Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Defense lawyers began making their case to spare the life of Boston Marathon bomber Zokhar Tsarnaev yesterday by contrasting him with his older brother, who they said was consumed by jihad. Attorney David Brook told jurors Monday that Tsarnaev was a good kid who was led down the path to terrorism by his brother, Tamerlan, who was later killed in a shootout with police. The jury must decide whether Tsarnaev deserves the death penalty, as prosecutors have called for, or if he should spend the rest of his life in prison. UAlbany professor James Acker is an expert in death penalty law. He helped establish the university's renowned National Death Penalty Archive and has published several articles examining capital punishment legislation. What do you think about Tsarnaev's sentencing? Will sparing his life be a worse punishment, and will killing him make him a martyr? Or does his crime merit death? It's a contentious issue for sure, and we want to hear from you. And the way you do that, and the lines are beginning to ring just a little bit now, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Well, Professor, paint the picture for us.
Well, there's. Thank you first for allowing me to share this time with you. This is a case that reduces the death penalty to its essence. It's a case where there's no doubt about guilt. There are no racial configurations that might deflect the discussion about the basic morality of the death penalty. It's a horrific crime that was premeditated. This is your case if you're a supporter of capital punishment. The other perspective is it's wrong to focus on individual cases, because what we really have at play is a system of punishment that is rife with error, mistake, and inflicts injustice every bit as much as it might inflict justice. So this case is going to be a test case for whether capital punishment in a state like Massachusetts, in a city of Boston that was ravaged by these crimes, is still going to be a prominent part of American criminal justice.
But in this case, you won't have, just playing the devil's advocate for a moment, you won't have, Jim, the possibility that he didn't do it, because we know he did.
That's been conceded from day one. Right. The defense team has strategically geared its efforts toward avoiding a death sentence, and in doing that, chose not to antagonize the jury by contesting guilt, and has basically conceded guilt. That's right.
Okay, let me get this straight. If one person on that jury holds out against the death penalty, then he gets automatic life in prison if the jury gets bound up in this.
That is the case under federal law. Under federal law, barring a unanimous verdict for death or life, the judge must impose a life sentence.
1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Bob in Middletown. All right, Bob, you're on. Go ahead. Hi, Bob. Uh-oh. Hello, Bob. You see what happens sometimes, Jim, because you haven't been here, is they listen on the radio, and the radio is... Yeah, okay, well, that's the end of that. Okay, let's go to John in Albany. John in Albany, you're on.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're good. Go ahead.
Basically, what I'm curious about is why we allow the death penalty to be legal when there's been plenty of cases where the person ends up being innocent. I mean, with technology advancing the way that it is, it's making it easier to determine definitively whether someone did it or not. But because there's still that question, like, how can we allow anyone to be executed under any circumstances?
You are correct. There have been, to date, something like 152 cases of people who've been sentenced to death in this country, spent years on death row, and later were exonerated, not on procedural issues, but because they didn't do it. Now, is the risk of executing an innocent person sufficiently great to shut down the system of capital punishment? That's where there is disagreement. Some people say that in a system of justice, error is inevitable. We cannot expect perfection. We have to do a benefit-cost analysis. There's an undeniable cost associated with executing innocent persons, but the argument goes, there are risks in any exercise that has utility, driving a car. There's utility in that. We know with certainty that there'll be 30,000 or thereabouts automobile deaths a year. We don't stop driving cars because there is a benefit that outweighs the risk. Now, are there sufficient benefits associated with capital punishment? That's a value judgment. Does it discourage people from killing? Is it necessary to keep vicious killers from killing again? Is it justified on retributive grounds? But certainly, you're absolutely right. The concern about innocence is driving a lot of people to have a lot of reluctance about continuing with the death penalty.
It's the one thing that has always gotten me, you know, about it. I mean, I'm opposed, even though some of these are heinous, heinous crimes, because of this one question of innocence that has been proven in the past. And that, to me, is a big way to put a stop to it. Also, when you say expense, you know, you're the expert, that the expense for putting somebody to death is much greater than just putting them in a jail cell.
That's counterintuitive. But
what'd you say? I'm sorry. What'd you say?
Have a good day. I gotta go. My phone's gonna die. Sorry,
okay.
Guys.
Okay. Bye-bye. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Jim.
Yeah, with respect to the expense, it's counterintuitive, but you're absolutely right. Study after study after study in multiple jurisdictions shows that maintaining a system of capital punishment is significantly more expensive than having life imprisonment as the maximum punishment. Now, why is that? Many complain about keeping murderers alive for the rest of their life at taxpayer expense. But in California, for example, it's been estimated that $4 billion, and that's billion with a B, dollars has been spent on a system of capital punishment since the late 1970s that's executed about 13 people, now has 750 awaiting execution on death row. This is money that could have been spent on law enforcement, education, health, compensating victims, but it's invested in an enterprise that has very little return if executions is what you're seeking.
You know what really, really bothers me, though? We say that the alternatives are life imprisonment without the possibility of parole or the death penalty.
Right.
What ends up happening, however, and we all know it, is people get that long sentence, and then, you know, after 20 years or 25 years, they start to petition saying they're different people now, and we should let them out. I know that Yoko Ono shows up every time there's a parole hearing for the killer of John Lennon, and we saying, no, don't do that. So you know, that bothers me. The idea bothers me of, okay, if you're going to put them in prison for the rest of their life without parole, I get that. But what I don't get is the idea that they could go free.
Well, life without parole is a relatively recent innovation in criminal justice. It became most prominent in the mid-1990s. So before that, a life sentence, there was an expectation of parole, and frequently people would get out in 20 years, sometimes less, sometimes more. But nowadays, honest life without parole means that unless at some future time
somebody changes their mind,
the legislature rescinds the statute or the governor or pardon board commutes. But beyond that, there's no discretionary release mechanism. So
we'll go to Jamie in Allenville. I like the name of that town. Jamie in Allenville, you're on.
Well, Alan, you know, maybe if we call it what it really was, it's the revenge penalty. Uh-huh. And it's a matter of, like, whether we want to get revenge on a person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just absurd that they even want to argue about, well, it's very expensive to keep people in jail. Well, that's because you choose to have a system of punishment, of revenge again, of incarceration cruelty. Like, you could very easily put people on a little island, give them a little plot of land to take care of themselves, and isolate them from society for the rest of time. And it won't cost us anything.
Okay, Jamie. Okay, Jamie. Make a point, Professor. What do you got?
And the other thing, is that, you know, if people want to put somebody to death, maybe we should have it that we behead them, and that the people that sentence him to death have to sit in the front row while it happens.
Okay.
So let's see how many death penalties.
Gotcha. Okay, James. What do you got?
Well, on the beheading matter, we do distance ourselves from the reality of executions. We do that in a variety of ways. We keep them behind closed walls. Frequently, it's late at night. And there's an argument these days that using lethal injection masks the kind of brutality associated with taking a human life. So there's a certain vocabulary and other techniques to not confront the reality that capital punishment involves the intentional killing of an individual who has been reduced basically to a helpless state, who could be maintained in prison with very minimal risks. Now, I'm not going to go as far as the transporting them to an island and letting them go on their own. The state does have a obligation even to remain consistent.
If the obligation is to protect society against this person, why is it important that we put him in a cell and make it an inhuman existence? Isn't that revenge?
Well, some would call it retribution. You certainly can't do nothing in response to a serious crime like murder. So there has to be a response. If it's not death, well, once upon a time, we did transport people to penal colonies, but there is an obligation on the government's part to protect individuals, even those who've been convicted of crimes. And can you imagine what might arise on an island without supervision and care provided?
Jamie, I'm so sorry. There are five people behind you. You made your case.
Yeah,
it's a good
one. Okay. But thanks, no answers. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yeah. Okay, we'll go to Bob in Middletown. Bob, you're on. Oh, no, wait a second. Bob, yeah. Stay right there. I got to take a little break, but it'll take seconds. We'll be right back, okay?
Support comes from Rhinebeck Artist Shops. Professional picture framing and fine art materials, Rhinebeck, New Paltz, and now at 793 Broadway in Kingston. RhinebeckArt.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. QFCC.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Great Camp Sagamore, a national historic landmark at Racket Lake in the Adirondacks. Open for accommodations, tours, and events since 1897, greatcampsagamore.org. Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, a community-owned natural grocery store dedicated to sustainable agriculture, the local economy, and the environment. Berkshire.coop. And Temple Sinai, Saratoga Springs, New York, an open congregation welcoming the Jewish community and visitors for Shabbat, holiday services, their religious school, cultural programs, and more. SaratogaSinai.org.
And we are on with Bob from Middletown. Okay, Bob, thanks for your patience. What do you got?
Thank you, Alan. I used to be a correction officer in the New York State system, and I always wondered why it was that the criminals were supported by the victims. And in this case, execution is more expensive than life in prison. So why not have people spending their life in prison paying back in one way or another? I know there's some argument made against this. Why aren't the perpetrators against society made to pay back to society by work or by some arrangement?
So how would it work? You got a specific vignette?
Sure, they work in an industry where a product is created, and the income from the sale of that product goes back to the victims.
Well, if the victims are dead, how can it go back to them? Maybe their families.
The people who no longer have a father or a son or a daughter.
Gotcha. Okay, James?
Well, interestingly, in public opinion polling, we learn that how respondents are asked about their views concerning the death penalty reflects the breakdown that we see. And some have suggested asking the public whether they would prefer the death penalty, life imprisonment without parole, or life imprisonment without parole plus the offender working in prison and making restitution to the victim's families. And as you have suggested, when the question is asked that way, a preponderance of the people, prefer that last option, prefer it more than capital punishment. It resonates a basic sense of fairness and what is owed. But as Alan was suggesting, the practical difficulties with employing prisoners productively in a way that generates meaningful income is quite a barrier. Now, what some states have done in general response to your suggestion, for example, in the recent repeal states of Maryland, Illinois, New Jersey, as capital punishment is taken off the table, there's a stipulation that monetary savings that would otherwise support the death penalty will be given to a victim's fund and sometimes law enforcement to invest what would have been spent on the death penalty to where it ought to be, which is helping victims make amends.
Now, James, I wanted to ask you this. It's a very interesting discussion. If you take out the third option and
yes.
just say death penalty versus life without parole, what do you get in the public opinion polling?
Well, let me start with the Gallup poll question. Do you support the death penalty for murder? That doesn't give an option.
Yeah.
Right now, we're at a very low point in response to that. I think the most recent one was 56% say yes.
Right.
Now, when you give people options, would you prefer the death penalty or life without parole? It's basically a dead heat. So it comes back down to a normal, and there's no clear preference for the death penalty at that
okay.
point.
Okay. Hey, Bob, and of course the other issue there is if a guy's making license plates and it's you're the ex CO, if a guy's making a license plate, that money goes to the state, not to the victim, right?
Well, it should go to at least pay for his room and board.
Yeah, well,
I mean that.
Well,
it sort of does.
We're footing
the entire bill, including medical, education, and why? Why should we be taking care of someone who committed these terrible crimes against people?
Well,
it's this fundamental question that isn't asked. You don't hear it. You don't hear this conversation.
Well, I do notice, Bob, that judges, particularly the federal judges I've been watching lately, have for regular criminals been taking all their assets away in one fine or another, so that there's some of that going already.
Yeah, who's getting that?
Hey, Bob, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, we've got a Ray in Great Barrington. Ray, you're on.
Hi. 2 points. First one, the question of innocent people being put to death.
Okay, we've discussed that already.
Right.
Second one.
So with that in mind, and that's been discussed, if we are a civilized nation, part of a civilized world, we hope, then we don't kill other humans. We are an intelligent race, and we find ways to do something. But if we are civilized, it's not an act of civility.
I get it. Is there
put another person to death?
Ray, is there a question here? Because there are a lot of people behind you.
It's just the point.
Okay.
Don't kill people if we're civilized.
Okay. Thank you, Ray. Appreciate it. And let's go to Phil in Amherst. Phil in Amherst, you're on.
Hi, my question is, do the ends justify the means? If the terrorists thought that their ends were justified by killing people, do we affirm that they were correct? Killing people is okay because that's what you think is okay to do. Is it okay for the state to kill people? So, saying that the terrorists were okay because they thought that their idea was okay to put forth by doing that. Do we have the right to do the same thing?
Okay, God, that's a question. We'll get an answer from Professor James. Professor?
Well, I don't know if I can answer adequately, but those who support the death penalty suggest that it's society's way of emphatically denouncing the condemnable act of taking an innocent life. There has to be a response, a dramatic response, that conveys the collective outrage of the claiming of an innocent life. Now, obviously, many people will disagree that the use of the death penalty is the appropriate way to convey that message, but it's a matter of interpreting the intent and the consequences of that societal response. What your question evokes is coming up in a related way in the Tsarnaev trial, because one of the seeds that the defense team is trying to plant is that having Tsarnaev sentenced to death will make him a martyr, and in the terrorist community, it may badly backfire by inspiring others to emulate what he and his brother did.
So if the state thinks you did something bad and they kill you, and so you're saying that it's okay to kill people if you think that somebody's done something bad.
Well, I'm not saying that.
That's a justification for killing.
The ironic phrase that I think the ACLU or somebody else invented is, why do people kill people? To show people that killing people is wrong. And clearly,
to show killing people is good.
That's the message that it delivers to some, that, boy, if the state does this, there must be some good reason to kill.
But if you think your cause is so powerful that you have to make some kind of powerful statement, as the state can make powerful statements, an individual can make the same sort of powerful statement, even though they may be absolutely wrong in doing it, but that doesn't make what the state does right.
No disagreement from me on that one.
Yeah, Phil, I wouldn't go around thinking that the professor is for the death penalty. Which
no, I don't think anybody, if they seriously consider it, would be for the death penalty. Mm-hmm. People that haven't really done any research or thought, thinking themselves in a situation like the drug smugglers that are about to be killed in Indonesia.
Yep.
Or if you're under some sort of dictatorship that thinks that you saying freedom is a good idea, and anybody that says so in that dictatorship will be killed.
Okay, Phil, thank you for your call. Appreciate it very
much. You're welcome.
All right, let's go to Emily in Plainfield. Okay, Emily, you're on.
Hi, Alan, and I forgot your guest name. I'm sorry.
Well, he's a very good guest, and indeed, Professor
Jim Acker.
James Acker. Yeah.
Okay. Well, he just mentioned that bumper sticker. Why do we kill people who kill people to show that killing people is wrong? I have it on my car, and I would say one of my biggest objections to the death penalty is that we are making of a crime the punishment. In other words, if somebody steal something, never do we say, well, now the punishment is we're going to steal from you. If somebody commits a violent act, and in this one case, we say, well, the punishment is the same as the crime, and I think it is a real slippery slope, because by definition, you are calling something, you know, should be totally forbidden, and at the same time, it's an instrument of the state. And that contradiction, to me, is one of the biggest problems.
You make a point, but let me ask you this. It has been often said that one of the major reasons Mario Cuomo lost to George Pataki was over this issue. How come so many people feel so committed to the idea that we should kill people?
How many hours do you have? I think the answer to that is a really complicated question that has a lot to do with our culture and revenge and right and wrong that I don't think I could condense into a brief enough answer.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, let's go to Tanya in Voorheesville. But when we do, I want to tell you, Tanya is the only light, unbelievably. All five lights were on. Tanya is the last light. So if anybody wants to get in, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Tanya, go.
Good afternoon. Let me just first say hello to Professor Acker. I'm one of your formal students.
Oh, well, hello, hello.
Hello. Well, what I'd like to first say is that I do think that the influence that the older brother had on the younger brother mitigates the death penalty from the get-go. But what my question is do you see any kind of trend towards saying the death penalty actually is cruel and unusual punishment, and that somehow society is going to say, okay, now we need to stop it? There must be some kind of light at the end of that tunnel, given all of the botched injections that have been happening nationwide.
There are numerous indications that the country is losing its appetite for the death penalty. I should be careful here, because the country and capital punishment don't necessarily align as wholes. That is, it's always been the South where capital punishment has been most widely utilized, and today there's the most support for it. But in the past decade, there have been remarkable changes nationally in the capital punishment scene. There have been six states that used to be death penalty states that have repealed. As recently as the mid-1990s, more than 300 people a year were sentenced to death across the country. Last year, something like 72 people in the whole country, something like 8 in the whole state of Texas. Now, that is a remarkable decline from 350 to 72. Executions have gone way down. I think we had something like 35 last year in the country, and the high point was 98 in the latter part of the 90s. There are governors in Colorado, Washington, Oregon now that have imposed moratoria on capital punishment while they're still in office. So there are numerous signs that something dramatic is taking place with capital punishment. And as I mentioned a moment ago, Gallup poll support is down to 56%. At one time, it was as high as 80%. So there's been a rethinking. And talking about the Boston Marathon trial, the jury's verdict in this case, I think, could be a bellwether. If under these circumstances we do not see a jury returning a sentence of death, I think that will be further evidence that it's an uphill battle for those who are supporting capital
punishment. Well, the polling
punishment.
In Boston, of course, is against the death penalty. So, you know, the chances that there'll be one person on that jury who says no is there. Hey, thank you, Tanya. Appreciate your call. Okay, let's go to Alan in Albany. Alan.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I don't really have a question. I wanted to offer a counterpoint to the series of callers that are trying to, like, put us into this civilization, right? Play the civilization card and we're civilized people. I mean, nobody really enjoys the death penalty. But the elephant in the room is that no one really wants to admit is that these people that are found guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, et cetera, they need to go away. Like, there's no place for them in society. Like, I can't kill a bug, right? But I understand why this process is in place. These folks need to just not be a part of the civilization. It's basically in defense of civilization.
Right?
Can't
you,
makes sense.
Okay, Alan, why can't you just put them in a cell for the rest of their lives?
I would ask what the statistics are on inmate violence against each other, the cancer that spreads from the inside of these facilities out, whether it's, you know, people that do get out. Not everyone has lifetime, without parole, right? So, I missed the number because I was on hold, but with 72 capital cases last year.
Death sentences, right.
All right, so those 72 individuals were just deemed so far gone that they needed to go away. I mean, and that's the bottom line, right? I mean, that's what it's for. You know, it's dirty work, right? The state's doing our dirty work for us, but it's in defense of this so-called civilization. Or else they wouldn't be in the position in the first place.
Well,
so,
Alan,
I mean, I get it.
Well, Alan, yeah. I must say, I thank you so much for your call. I want to make sure that everybody knows that all opinions are welcome here, and it doesn't have to be, one single lockstep, and I appreciate your call. Thanks again.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Doc. Okay. Take care.
All right. Let's go to Jeff in Gardner. Jeff, you're on.
Good afternoon. I just think that it would be the best example possible to teach our young people that you're not supposed to kill people if we don't kill people. So that's why I'm against the death penalty.
Okay.
But further, I would just like to say, what if 35 years from now, this young guy, after having seen his whole life wasted in a jail cell, he might develop a different attitude about the fact that he's taken these innocent lives.
Okay, so let's assume. Wait. Let's assume you're right. Let's assume he gets a different attitude. His victims are still dead.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything we can do about that, Alan. I just don't believe that we're going to be able to do anything about that.
Okay, Jeff, thanks for the call.
But maybe he could write something that would prevent other people from making the same mistake that he made.
If I might just comment, there's an argument certainly to be made that a single act does not define an individual and certainly doesn't necessarily determine that individual's possibility of change in the future. Now, Dzhokhar Tsarnaev was 19 when he committed the murderous acts that he did in Boston. And as you well may know, the Supreme Court has recently ruled that mandatory life imprisonment for offenders who commit murder before they turn 18 is unconstitutional. And it's largely for the reason there's so much potential for change, particularly yes. among young people. And Tsarnaev is right on the cusp. And it does beg the question of how to balance looking backward at the destruction, the havoc, the misery that Tsarnaev created versus contemplating whether, as you put it, 35 years from now, this is going to be a very different person.
Well, we've been down this road many times. I have to say, I've got children. And if one of these people did them in, you know, it's not a matter of revenge. It is that I would not want to say, oh, well, my kid is not going to be allowed to have a different kind of philosophy later on, but this guy can. Nope. I think life in prison is the right way to go. Jeff, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it. Okay. And we'll go take a break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from the Center for Extended Care on University Drive in Amherst, a family-owned and operated nursing center offering rehab, long-term care, and Alzheimer's specialty care. CECAA.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie presenting The Artist Revealed, artists' portraits and self-portraits, with works by Milton Avery, Chuck Close, Leonard Baskin, Edward Steichen, Norman Rockwell, and more. ArkellMuseum.org. H. Houst & Son True Value, Woodstock, New York. Since 1932, a local store now offering organic and heirloom vegetable and flower seeds and seed starting supplies. True value. Behind every project is a true value. HHoust.com. Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York. A Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, plus collectibles and curiosities. Open 7 days a week. YeOldWarwickBookshop.com. Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors. Serving the Northeast since 2001, stonesoupconcrete.com and on Facebook. And Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, quarry and fabrication, used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. Ashfieldstone.com.
We are back. Thank you, Zachary. Jamie writes, now slave labor, break out the chain gang. Why don't we let victims' family come once a year to cut parts of the incarcerated or flog them? And he says, this boy, capital B-O-Y, is 21 years old. He participated in a single event. He is not a social hopeless person. He's misguided, not defective. Everything he believes in will change 10 times over the next 10 years. Do not forget his actions were political, not psychotic. There is a fine line between terrorist and national hero. Hey, I read him. I don't have to agree with him. Let's go to Calvin in Woodstock. Okay, Calvin, you're on. Calvin.
Yes, hello. Thank you. Sure. I think that we can all agree as evolved beings that if we're, say, attacked verbally, it's important to take a breath and consider whether a counterattack is appropriate.
Correct.
This is aside from this particular case in Boston. But we do have a primal side that is entitled, I think, to react quickly in the event of an attack of a severe nature. Example, if there was someone in your home and they had just attempted to kill, perhaps did or attempted to kill a child or your wife, and you came on the scene and saw that they were on their way to another room to do the same. I think we could all agree that if we were capable, we would act accordingly to stop that person, even if it meant fatal injury to that person. So I think that we have to recognize that we have an animal instinct, but we also have a spiritual intellect that, if given time to contemplate, we may come up with a different response. I just kind of want to address that, you know, there's a spiritual, religious, moral aspect to it, and we are also, I mean, I don't know that I want to teach my child to not respond appropriately in a severe situation that they happen to be involved in. I just wanted to say that there's different things to teach people.
Okay, James.
And I'm not necessarily in favor of the death.
Okay, Calvin, one second here. James Acker?
Well, two responses. I think you're quite right that most people would find a big difference between killing somebody to prevent future violence by that same person, as in the context of self-defense or somebody at large at your house. That's very different from apprehending an individual, incarcerating the person, incapacitating, and then deciding whether now we should use capital punishment in order to take the individual's life. And it, so far as finding that balance between a passionate individualistic response and a legally measured response, I think is a quite significant one. All of us would react with horror, outrage if one of our loved ones were killed. We might want to, well, kill the person who killed our loved ones. Now, when government steps in and under the mantle of law makes a decision, it's far different from the passionate, immediate response. Sure. It has to be a well-thought-out response. So the differences you're pointing out, I think, are significant ones.
Calvin, we're going to have to let you go. We got five people on the line. I want to get everybody in before the show is over, okay? Thanks a lot.
Of course.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
Let's go to Amy in Albany. Okay, Amy, you're on. Oh.
Hi.
Yeah, come on, Amy. You're on.
Hi,
go ahead.
How are you? I was going to say, and I noticed you mentioned Jamie took my words also regarding Chain King. I'm going to try to be quick, but I know I talk really fast. I want to also make a preface that, number one, I am a black female. I'm very socially liberal when it comes to economic policy in many ways. So I want to set that preface up front. But, you know, people say they don't like the death penalty, and they have a whole lot of reasons why. But the same way with humans, you have animals out here, dogs, cats, squirrels and things. They're really nice, but then when they become a rabid, they're not only a danger to themselves, they're a danger to other animals, they're a danger to each people. So, if, you know, people are against the death penalty, there's ways that you could, quote-unquote, make it a bit more humane. You could donate their organs. You could use them for science. You could also, like someone said, have a penal colony. And you were saying, well, is that nice to have a bunch of prisoners fight each other in a colony? Well, that's how Australia got established. And in jail, they're fighting each other anyway. Or if you don't want to do that, they're making license plates. So how is doing a chain gang so much more cool?
Okay, Amy, I am so sorry. Got a whole bunch of people behind you. I think you've made your point.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Amy. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Okay.
Bye.
Let's go to Diane in Cooperstown. Okay, Diane, you're on.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, my best friend was raped and murdered by four guys years and years ago. They caught all of them. The youngest turned state evidence and witnessed against the other guys, and all three of the others were fried over a period of time. It took, you know, I don't know how many, you know, appeals and what have you that the law allows, and until finally it's done. And I'd say that a lot of the gut-wrenching reaction to the kinds of heinous crimes that this Boston situation reflects, you know, it kind of dilutes the whole thing over time, although I know for many whose loved ones are taken from them, it lasts a lifetime. I had no wish for them to be dead, alive, good, bad, whatever. I just wanted them away. so that they would never, ever steal from someone who had no idea what was coming, ever, another life. And but I think that in terms of the state, in terms of our society deciding that we are, as a unit, going to advocate for punishment of death, I agree with many callers that I think it's very, it's just a very tricky.
Okay, Diane, I don't want to cut you off, but I do want to try to get everybody in. Professor Acker, what do you got?
Sure.
Well, let me just thank you for the reflections of one who's been very close to a victim of violent crime. What we're seeing in the Boston Marathon trial, as you probably have noted, is that the parents of the 8-year-old boy who was murdered in the Boston Marathon said something that is somewhat similar to what you did, in that they have announced that they would prefer that the death penalty phase of the trial not go forward. They would be very comfortable if Tsarnaev were sentenced to life imprisonment without parole, simply to get him out of the public limelight, to avoid the anticipated years of appeals. He will be in the public limelight. Just begin the healing process as much as possible. Now, the victims' community has very different opinions about the propriety of the death penalty. All of those opinions are to be respected. But it is somewhat noteworthy that your comments have some parallel to what we've just heard from the Boston situation.
Diane, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Joanne in Enfield. Joanne, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. I had a comment about a person that called in a few minutes ago who was, I understood, was trying to argue that if the state had the right to execute someone that killed them, then the individual citizen should have the same right. And it just blows my mind. I mean, citizens have always given their states more power than they have as individuals.
Are you sure you're not putting words in the caller's mouth?
I thought I understood him to say that the citizen should have the same right as the state, and that certainly can't be the case. I mean, the state is the only one that has the right, for instance, to mint money.
Yeah.
Or to seize your property through eminent domain. We have no right to have the same rights and freedoms as the state has.
Well, I'm sure that your hearing of him was different from mine. But what I was hearing was something different, which is just an explanation of the human gut and response to a heinous crime committed in front of them, which is very different. I don't think we were talking as much about rights.
This was a while. This was about 20 minutes ago.
Professor?
Well, I'm with you, Alan. But in deference to our caller, I'm not sure we're talking about the same caller. I think it was contextual. The conversation I'm recalling was more if your home was invaded and a killer was at large, might one want to kill the killer? And I think that is different.
This was before that.
Okay.
This was about 20 minutes ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
it took me a while to get
okay.
in.
Joanne, yeah. I think you've made All your right. point, and we mm-hmm. appreciate it very much. Thank
All
you.
All right. Thank
okay.
you.
Let's go to Lois in Amherst. Okay, Lois, you're on.
Hi. Great discussion. So I'd like to know from our guest speaker, can he give some examples of how other countries deal with this issue, particularly with an eye toward, are there countries that actually have programs that rehabilitate people, whatever heinous crimes they've committed, that they really might be able to be changed?
Well, let me just say very quickly that the United States is in a minority of countries that supports the death penalty. No European countries do. None of our neighbors in North America do. Virtually gone in South America. And there are very different approaches used, which are controversial for predictable reasons. But in Norway, for example, where there was that horrible mass murder a few years ago, the most sentence that can be imposed is 21 years. Now, that strikes a lot of people as way too short for something like that, but it's a very different philosophy, more of a restorative than a punitive philosophy.
Great. Okay.
And does restoration work? I mean, are there successful examples of...
I'm sure that there are. There's a more hopeful spirit associated with restorative than a punitive response. And with training programming, I think there's at least significantly more hope. I'm not probably qualified to speak with authority on the effectiveness of those programs.
Hey, Lois, just remember that there are still victims who are dead.
Of course.
So restorative is one thing, but you can't restore those people's lives.
I understand.
Thanks, Lois. Appreciate your call. Okay, let's go to Mike in Pleasant Valley. Mike.
Yes, hi. Two things. Is capital punishment truly a deterrent, number one? And number two, if people are truly broken in that maybe they're mentally or physiologically messed up and they want to commit rape or murder or things like that, if there's no redemption for them or no ability to fix them with the science we have now, what other choice would we have then to, I guess, impose capital punishment?
On the deterrence question, the National Academies of Science came out with another blue ribbon report. I mean, this issue has been studied for centuries, but in 2012, the experts concluded that there is no convincing evidence one way or the other with respect to whether executing people has any impact on the homicide rate. I think most people agree deterrence is dubious at best.
I agree with you also.
On the other matter, there's another very big death penalty trial that's just begun in Colorado involving James Holmes in the Batman Theater. And he, of course, has pled not guilty by reason of insanity. Arguably, he suffered from mental illness, and that precipitated his shootings. Now, if a mentally ill person does commit murder, I think that undermines culpability and ought to make us refrain from using the most serious punishment, death, and think more along the lines of responding in a treatment mode, incapacitation, but not the hammer, not the death penalty.
Hey, Mike, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to DJ in Schenectady. DJ, we're running out of time here. Go ahead.
Just a quick comment. One of your previous callers equated terrorist killings to our killing with the death penalty.
Right.
And I really think that's wrong. The people in the towers on 9/11 certainly had no judicial process involved, and I think where we do have our judicial process working, it's certainly not at all 100%, but at least there was a trial for somebody.
Okay,
DJ,
I think you've made your point. I'm trying to get everybody in. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Let's go to Jim in Northampton. Jim, can you do it in a sentence?
Hi. I can't do it in a sentence.
Yeah, you can. You want to ask the following question. Is it worth one innocent life if incorrectly executing people? That'd be a sentence.
Yeah. It's easy for people who have known victims, which many of us have. How about people who have known someone who's been wrongly convicted? Not many people can relate to that, but what if that was your child wrongly convicted?
Yeah, well, we have, in fact, discussed that at the very beginning. Professor Acker has given you the stats on that.
Yeah, it's the ultimate injustice, and one is one too many. I agree.
Okay, Jim, thank you very much. And we're going to go to Patrick in Poughkeepsie. Patrick, one sentence, go.
Yes, I'm in favor of penance. And for an example, I would send them into Fukushima to do good work for us to make up their debt to society. And then they could, you know, die as heroes, like they did in Chernobyl.
Patrick, thank you. Okay, gang, that's it. We are out of time. You can post comments at the bottom of today's show page at Vox Pop section of our website, wmc.org/VoxPop. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Rosebud Development, collaborating with residential clients to design and build functional outdoor spaces that reflect their lifestyle. That is RedbudDevelopment.com, Redbud Development. TJ's Taylor Rental at Party Plus, two locations, Route 9 in Hadley and Route 202 in South Hadley, providing tool and equipment rentals for homeowners and contractors. TJ's TJsTaylorRental.com. Curtis Lumber, working to support their communities through their Pet Connection sponsorship and by providing professional services and supplies to owners and contractors. CurtisLumber.com. And College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Susie Chekai. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein. And our special guest was Professor James Agger. Thank you all. Now stay tuned for a news update.